Welcome to episode 7 of the Chingona Homesteader podcast. I'm Margot P. of the ChingonaHomesteader.com. For those of you who are new to the podcast, I am a total newbie in the world of homesteading, although I have a family tradition of it that goes back for centuries. There was a break in that tradition in my parents' generation, and so I didn't grow up knowing how to grow a darn thing, and so I'm just learning now. I'm learning how to just start from scratch, and when I decided to undertake setting up my tiny farm in the city, and it is tiny, I knew, or at least I thought I knew, I thought that what I was doing was setting up something that was going to take a very, very long time. You know, I was making a long-term investment, if you will, that it was going to take me, you know, just, it was going to be a while before I saw anything tangible or measurable as far as, you know, whether or not we were getting anything out of this homesteading experience. I really thought, you know, I thought, okay, I'm going to be slogging along, you know, at this for a while, kind of like weight loss. I don't know if you have any experience with weight loss. I happen to have a lot of experience with weight loss. I've done some pretty significant weight loss in my life. If you followed me on my old blog and podcast, Nacho Mama's blog, I talked a lot about that there. But like that was just a really long process, at least it was for me, you know, and I was just kind of chipping away at it day after day after day. And it was honestly like 2 or 3 years before I myself could experience any tangible results. So going into this homesteading, this urban homesteading, tiny farming experiment, I kind of thought that it was going to be like that, and which I was totally prepared for. I was down for it. I thought, well, you know, I'm going to find somebody to help me out. First, I need to learn. I need to do a lot of research, which that did take some time. I found somebody to help me set up my tiny farm. You know, I got it. I brought in an expert. Sometimes you have to get professional help. And I have a wonderful, what should we call him? Consultant farmer who came in and, you know, set up some, I mean, as impossible as it, you, nobody looking at the patch of land I was working with would say, yo, you could put a farm here. But I found a guy who did exactly that. And he set up the soil for me and he put in irrigation, and he did a wonderful job. He's explaining, you know, like what kinds of things we should be planting and when and how and what things we should plant from seed and what things we should get little starts, you know, little starter plants for. And even then I thought, well, you know, this, what am I looking at? You know, a few months, at least maybe a year. You know, but I was prepared for that long-term investment here. And, so imagine my surprise. I mean, here I am. I'm really only really, I think I started, although I started setting up the house, meaning the inside of the house, which is a whole other ball of wax, of course. I was working on the interior of the house for the first couple of months that we've lived here. We've only lived here for like 4 months. So I've only been dealing with the tiny farm for maybe 2 months. I mean, 2 months ago, I had flat, desolate dirt that I, you know, was so compacted. It was almost like concrete. I mean, it was, like I said, nobody would look at that piece of land and go, yeah, you're going to grow food here. And somehow, miraculously, life led me to somebody who helped me do that, who did exactly that, said, yeah, oh, we could totally do food here. So anyway, it's only been like 2 months, you guys. And I have only planted of the usable space that this consultant farmer has helped me identify that I'm dealing with, you know, which is still tiny. I've only planted maybe a third of the usable space that I have available to plant. And I'm going to plant all of it. I will. I'm going to get to all of it. But so far, I'm at a third. And so I never in my wildest dreams imagined that with this little amount of planting in this eensy little amount of time that I would already be feeding my family from this garden. But I am. It is crazy. You know, just with this tiny little bit of space, I'm going to say a four, it's 4 feet by 4 feet wide by 8 or 9 feet long, something like that. That's not big for a farm. That's just the part I've planted so far, mind you. And already from just that amount of space, we are meeting almost all of our vegetable needs in under 2 months. I'm stunned. So here's what we're well, in the next segment, I'll rattle off what we're growing. I'll rattle off, first of all, what we're already eating, and secondly, like what's going to be a longer term stuff that we've planted, and where I am in the country and all that kind of stuff. So that's up in this next segment of the Chingona Homesteader Podcast. So let's start with where I live. I live in San Diego, which is in Southern California, and which is known for its extremely what do we want to call it? Popular, pleasant weather. It is. It's crazy nice here, like all the time. We don't really have winter, although this year we did have kind of a cold snap. It was kind of late. It was in February, I think, and we did have like it got down in the 30s for a second. But normally it's in the, you know, in the winter time it's usually like in the 50s, and in the summer it doesn't get even, you know, it gets maybe up into the 90s at the hottest, but it's certainly nothing like one would encounter in, say, Arizona or even Los Angeles. It gets hotter and colder than it does here. I don't know. It's just crazy mild weather that we have, which is very much to your advantage if you are trying to grow food. So, like I said, so far the amount of space that I've planted, which is only about a third of what I'm going to be planting, has been planted. It's about a 4 by 8 foot amount area of land, and 4 foot by 8 foot. And I also have planted in the what's sometimes called the parkway. You know, if you live in the city, and lots of cities have this, where you live in a city, you live on a street, in a house, not usually in an apartment, but in a house. And from your house to the street, there's a sidewalk, and then there's also like this little strip of land between, I guess, to protect pedestrians from the traffic on the street. So between the actual sidewalk where pedestrians will walk and the actual street where cars are driving, there's this little strip of land. Mine is about a little over 2 feet wide, and it's in like little blocks, and it's often called a parkway, which sounds more grand than just like a hole in the sidewalk, which is what it is. Anyway, so I planted a couple of trees. I planted a couple of fruit trees in the parkway. And knowing full well that the city could maybe tell me, like, hey, you need to get rid of those trees. Although the city has one of the cool things about the city of San Diego, and I bring this up because your city may have a program like this. This is why I think that the city is not going to care about my trees. Because the city of San Diego has a program where they will give you trees. So if you live in a big city and you have one of these parkway, and these parkway little spots of land are typically pretty hideous. They're often littered. You know, a lot of them here are just weeds and rocks. They're not nice to look at. And the city of San Diego has a program where all you do, you fill out a form and you say, if you give me, City of San Diego, if you give me a tree, I agree, I commit to watering the tree with my own water, that I pay for, obviously. And the city will give you a free tree. It's really cool. So I'm sure there are other cities in the United States that are doing this. So look into your city, see if they have a free tree program like this. And I'll tell you, I water my trees in my parkway with gray water from our bathtub. Our house is so small that we have, and it's so old. We have, it's over 100 years old. As you probably, if you've listened to this podcast, you've heard me mention, I live in a very old bungalow. And one of the things I love about my little house is that we still have the original clawfoot tub. And our house is so small that it's pretty easy and very little effort to take buckets of water after one has taken a bath, take buckets of water with the bath water out to the trees and water the trees in the parkway. It's not a long trip to carry that bucket because the house is so very small. And that isn't costing me anything extra. In fact, out of every bath that I take, I don't take a bath every single day because it does use more water than a shower. But frankly, I don't bathe every single day. I don't find that I really have to most of the year. And so, but for every bath that I take, I'm able to collect, if not immediately use, but at least collect like 2 days worth of water out of a normal bath that I can use for the plants that aren't set up with for my irrigation system. So including the trees that I planted in the parkway. So in the parkway I have planted so far I planted a nectarine tree. No, sorry. I planted an apricot tree. Here's something. Is it apricot or apricot? I have heard a lot of people say apricot. I planted the apricot tree because my mama Lola, my dear beloved departed grandmother, that was her favorite fruit. But she always said apricot, which I never knew if that was like a regionalism. Anyway, I don't know if it's apricot or apricot, but whatever it is, it's a stone fruit. It was my grandmother's favorite, and so I planted one of those. And then I also planted a plum tree in another spot in the parkway just because I was able to get a plum tree for next to nothing. So those get watered with the gray water. So those are going to be, if I can get them to produce fruit. We're looking at a year, at minimum a year. Although they're already, they've already got a little bit of a head start. These are not like little saplings, but they're small, but they're not that small. It's not impossible that in a year I could maybe get a fruit out of them. So there's that. Now on the little 4x8 area that we've planted so far, the things that we are already harvesting and eating are. Lettuces. I have at least three varieties of lettuce, which grows like a weed. I have to harvest lettuce every day, or it will die. We're getting plenty of lettuce. We're also getting plenty of kale. The kale also grows like a weed. And what grows even faster than a weed is the cilantro, or what do you guys call it? Coriander. Sometimes it's called coriander. We of course call it cilantro. And the other thing that I swear I can see it growing before my very eyes is nasturtium, which cracks me up that I have it in this front little patch, garden patch, because in the back, I also live on a wild canyon, which is too, it's too steep and dangerous. Like there's, you can't plant things back there. It's just a wild, plants that grow back there. And one of the wild plants that grows back there happens to be nasturtium. I never knew, although I grew up on canyons and around nasturtium my whole life, and I like it. It's pretty. The flowers are nice. I never knew you could eat it. That was news to me. So I have it growing in the garden in the tiny farm. And it grows ludicrously fast. It has a very, I like the flavor a lot. It has a very peppery kind of a fa flavor. It's very similar to me. It tastes very similar to arugula. Yeah, like an arugula, but super peppery, which I like. And that's another thing I have to harvest every single day. Like every day I go out, I cut the nasturtium way, way down. And the next day it's like I never cut it in the first place. It's amazing. And the leaves are huge. They're like, they're circular. And I'm going to say they're a good 3 inches wide. They're big. So that's already, we're already eating that. We're also already eating radishes. Radishes are a great thing if you have children to grow because they grow from seed really super crazy fast. So we are also eating radishes. And there's lots of different kinds of radishes. If you say you don't like radishes, I say give them a chance because there are so many varieties of radishes. My husband was like, oh, yuck, I can't stand them. But the ones that he's like, they're too, I don't like them. They have an aftertaste I don't like. I don't like how spicy they are. The radishes that we have are very mild. They're not peppery. They don't have an aftertaste. I forget what they're called. They're called like cherry bell or something like that. But you can get something like a watermelon radish. There's a lot of varieties of radishes. And they are like the easiest thing in the world to grow. Fabulous for kids. We are also eating bunching onions. That's another thing that I have. And spinach. I have some spinach that I'm growing from a starter plant that I got, and I have other spinach that I'm already eating that I've grown just from a seed. This is incredible. I just can't even believe it. And there's something else that we're eating that I'm forgetting about. What is it? Kale, radishes, lettuce. Bok choy. Yeah, we've got bok choy our consultant farmer gave me these little teeny baby starts that looked like they were just going to expire overnight when he put them in the ground. And now they are huge, lush, beautiful bok choy. So these are things that I cannot believe how fast they grow that I can barely keep up with them. Already we have more than enough salad for our family of four, which I can't even believe. So those are the short-term things that we have growing in that little 4x8 plot. But we also have some stuff that takes a little longer. I have some kale that I'm growing from seed. That's taking that's taking its time, but it is coming in. I have a grapevine because this is California, so grapes are kind of compulsory. They're blueberry grapes, and I'm told that they grow quite fast. They grow faster than wine grapes. These are what are called table grapes, meaning they're just for eating and they're not for making wine. And so they're telling me that it's according to the directions, it says like in a year, we could have edible grapes off of this grapevine. And I also have a little fig tree that's inside that little same little area because it's small. It's like I don't know if it's a dwarf tree. But I mean, look at all this food, you guys, that I have planted in this tiny amount of space. And one of the advantages, there's a lot of advantages I'm finding already to having this tiny farm in a city on a busy street. One, the fact that I'm working with this compact space means it's super easy to work my little plots. You know, I can maneuver around them. I can do weeding. The weeding is not like ridiculous. And also because I live on a street where there is constant traffic, I do live on a very busy, busy street. The cool thing about that is this is what my consultant farmer has said, because I was asking like, what's up with this? I think that the constant traffic, the constant city traffic is keeping pests away from my crops, at least keeping animals away, because there are animals around that will eat your stuff. But they haven't so far, knock wood, they so far have not touched the crops. So I cannot believe it. So I'm getting ready for phase two. I have a second 4x8 plot that I need to plant, and I'm getting started. I might put in peppers. I'm trying to decide what I'm going to put over there. Because I certainly don't need any more salad. But you guys, I am just, for those of you who are like actual, you've been homesteading for a long time or you're out in the country, I know like what a ridiculous yokel I sound like, but I'm just like, goy, I can't believe I have salad every day. I really can't believe I have salad every day. And I also have I have a lime tree that was here when we moved in. My cousin planted it in front of our house about 20 years ago. So it's a little dwarf lime tree that makes lots of lovely limes. And yeah, you guys, if you, I'm amazed. I'm amazed. Oh, and I didn't even talk about the microgreens. I have also been growing microgreens, and this is something that you can do if you live in an apartment. I love to shop at my local farmers market. San Diego, one of the cool things, we have a farmers market every single day of the year, except for major holidays. Every single day of the year, because of our fabulous weather, there is a farmers market somewhere that you can go to. And my local farmers market, I love, it's on Sundays. It's one of the bigger ones. And I have gotten hooked recently on their microgreens. I love them. They are delicious. They are packed with nutrition, but they're super expensive. And I was telling myself, like, you know, it's a treat. I really like it. You know, it's worth the splurge. But after buying, you know, a lot of microgreens for a lot of money, I wondered, like, well, how hard can it be to sprout these myself? Turns out it's freaking easy. Turns out for the price of what I was paying for one little 4x4 container of microgreens, I could buy a gigantic bag of microgreen organic seeds and sprout them myself. I just sprout them in a clear plastic container with a folded up wet paper towel on the bottom. Wet the paper towel, like I fold the paper towel in half, wet it, sprinkle the seeds on top, and then every now and again I just add a little extra water. And I've got microgreens. I have like a little microgreen farm on my windowsill. So I always have certain them in different stages of growth on the windowsill, and it looks nice. And it's something you could do no matter where you live. You could even do this if you were living in a van. Seriously, you could just be driving around with your little microgreen farm on the dashboard. So it's fantastic. I really, really love it. And anyway, that is what we are already harvesting here at the Chingona Homestead. And I'm just stunned and amazed. So I'll keep you posted as the harvests continue. And I'm sure there's going to be some crops that just don't ever take, because I'll just think, like, why did I think I could grow that? But, you know, it's very low risk and it's fun. And we're eating. So that's cool. So anyway, stay tuned for more episodes of the Chingona Homesteader podcast. Next up, actually, interestingly, I'm going to be visiting the an arts festival in Ventura, California, which is a major center for agriculture in Southern California, and I have a personal history there. But I'm going to try to record while I'm there, and it's at a festival called Daughters of the Culture, and again, it's in Ventura, California. So we're going to be trying to do some live recording, and we'll see how that goes. And thanks a lot for joining me here on the Chingona Homesteader podcast, and I'll be back soon. Don't forget to check out my website, thechingonahomesteader.com. If you want to follow me on social media, all of my social media handles are at She's Nacho Mama. That's SHESNACHOMAMA. And the Chingona Homesteader podcast is a Bungalow Productions production. Thanks a lot for listening. I'll be back soon. Bye, guys.